Lo que no hace, lo toca mati. 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 En el hueca a donatiu, donatiu, donatiu.
Welcome to the National Native Network podcast series. Today we're presenting our webinar archive, Colorectal Cancer Prevention in the Alaska Tribal Health System, presented on March 29th, 2023. To view the webinar video and additional resources, please visit our website, keepitsacred.org, and click the Resources tab and the Webinar Archive tab. Please enjoy our presentation.
Hi there, welcome everybody. My name is Mike Ouellette with the National Native Network, a program of the Intertribal Council of Michigan. Welcome to the NNN webinar series on cancer risk reduction in Indian Country. This webinar is titled Smoke-Free Tribal Housing Policies, Colorectal Cancer Prevention in the Alaska Tribal Health System. This technical assistance webinar is being hosted by the National Native Network, which offers technical assistance and resources for commercial tobacco and cancer prevention and control throughout Indian Country and the Indian Health Service Clinical Support Center. Your presenter today is Dr. Diana Redwood, PhD, MPH, a senior epidemiologist with the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium. And at the conclusion of this activity, the healthcare team will be able to examine the burden of colorectal cancer among Alaska Native people and rates of colorectal cancer screening, implement evidence-based program activities to increase colorectal cancer screening among Alaska Native people, and appropriately assess, educate, and refer patients for colorectal screening and prevention. If you have any questions, please type your questions into the question box on your Zoom panel. Questions will be answered during the last few minutes of the webinar. Thank you very much. And now I will throw the keyboard and mouse over to Dr. Diana Redwood.
Thank you so much, Mike, and thank you all for being here today. I greatly appreciate your time and willingness to have me come speak with you. And I know not everyone gets as thrilled about colorectal cancer prevention as I do, but I do think it is something that whatever health promotion and health activities that you are working on, the colorectal cancer screening and trying to educate folks and help people navigate them to screening, this has relevance for all of the work we do. So I hope you will take some of what I teach with you today, learn together, and share this knowledge more widely. So as Mike said, please put questions in the chat. I'm happy to answer. And I love having discussions with folks. So I work within the Alaska Tribal Health System at the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium. I've been privileged to work in our system for almost 20 years. So I'm pleased to share with you the information today. So let's go ahead and get started. So my disclosures, I do have funding from Centers for Disease Control and Prevention and the National Institutes of Health, as well as an Exact Sciences Investigator Award. I always like to start with a land acknowledgement to thank the Dena'ina people on whose traditional lands I live and work, and to thank them for their past and present stewardship of the waters, plants, animals, and spiritual practices of this beautiful place. I took that picture that you see in front of you of the fireweed across the bay, and really, Alaska is this beautiful. So if you haven't ever come visited us, you should come up and see it for yourself. So why is colorectal cancer screening important? Well, colorectal cancer is one of the few cancers that can be screened for. It can be treated if it is found early, and it can be prevented through the removal of precancerous polyps. It's one of the few cancers we can actually do something about, which makes it really exciting. And colorectal cancer, I feel like I always end up giving this talk over lunchtime. I guess for some of you on the East Coast, it's a little bit later. But just to back up a step, not everyone knows what this is. When I first started this job, my mom didn't know what colorectal cancer screening was. And so this is something that, you know, again, we learn these things. So colorectal cancer is cancer that starts in the large intestine or the colon. And it is 6 feet long. And so it has a lot of area where little tiny polyps or precancerous growths can turn slowly into cancer. The good news is that colorectal cancer does start very slowly. It takes about 10 to 15 years for a colorectal cancer to develop. So that gives us a long lead time and opportunity for prevention and early detection. And I put this graph up on. I try not to use lots of graphs in my presentations, but I think it really is something that illustrates that colorectal cancer, for if it's found early at stage 1 and 2, there's a 90% 5-year survival rate. That's incredible. That's most people, getting the cancer, having it cured, going on with their lives, all the busy things that they love and work and do in their lives. So it's really important, if we can, to get it at that early stage. And you can see then it drops down to 71%. It's still pretty good. If you still can catch it at that stage 3, but it's really much less curable and treatable when it's at that stage 4, when it has spread to other organs in the body. Now, one of the things that's really encouraging is that because of colorectal cancer screening and early detection, across the U.S., colorectal cancer incidence, or the new cases of colorectal cancer, as well as deaths due to colorectal cancer, have fallen steadily over the past 35 years. So this is something that's really exciting. That being said, this was a national report that came out very recently. They said, and they called out this in their report. So they said, notably, American Indian and Alaska Native people are the only racial and ethnic group for which colorectal cancer mortality rates are not declining. So this is something that we are very concerned about. And so that is why, at least within my group and within the Alaska Tribal Health System, it's been something we're really concerned about, getting more people screened so that we can deal with this issue. And I know this is a national audience. I've been seeing in the chat, a lot of you are from a bunch of different places across the US. And so sometimes people ask me, well, how does it vary across Indian country? You know, how is colorectal cancer across Indian country? Is it the same among all Native people, or does it, are some places higher and some places lower? And you can see, this is the Indian Health Service regions, which many of you are familiar with, where the whole country gets divided up into chunks. And we really see that Alaska has the highest, by far, highest colorectal cancer incidence rate. And it really, it varies by area, and for, you can see here in Alaska, we have about 3 times as much colorectal cancer new cases as in the eastern portion of the U.S. So I think it's really something that we do want to think about, where you're located and how we can reduce that. It is very exciting for me. This is, I guess we're almost to the end of March, but this is Colorectal Cancer Awareness Month, is March every year. And so we try and do a lot of presentations and discussion and getting the word out about this issue. So this is something that drives my work, 2 times. And what 2 times, what this number means is Alaska Native people experience twice as much colorectal cancer, both new cases and deaths due to colorectal cancer, as US whites. So it's a sizable health disparity, and it's something that our tribal health organizations have really wanted to address and tackle as an issue, and because it affects people in our communities. Even if you aren't the person with cancer, all of us, if we've known somebody that has cancer or a family member, it really affects everyone. So if this is a cancer that we can screen and we can treat and we can prevent, let's try and get that number down. So what are the things that are associated with colorectal cancer? Well, a couple of them are non-modifiable risk factors. So as we get older, cancer in general increases, and colorectal cancer is one of those. So just being older, living long enough makes you have that risk. Also, family history. So if you have a parent or a sibling or your child has had colorectal cancer, you also are more likely to get colorectal cancer. So it's a really important thing to talk to family members. As I said, once I got this job, I talked to my mom about colon screening. She had no idea. And I said, Mom, you have to get screened. Like, I'll look bad at my job if my own mom doesn't go in. So she went and got screened and everything was good. So again, just making sure that we are talking about family history and encouraging people to get screened. There's also a number of risk factors that are modifiable, and I show these up on the screen. These are things like being physically inactive, overweight, obesity, eating lots of red or processed meats, not eating very many fruits and veggies, alcohol use, and tobacco use. So I think all of us, when we look at these things, even if you don't work in colorectal cancer prevention, whether you're working in other chronic diseases, if you are working in tobacco prevention, we see these and we know, you know, if you're a diabetes educator, these are the same things. So the good news is that if we can help people live healthier lives, increase the opportunities for people to be healthy, it actually affects all kinds of chronic conditions and helps us stay healthy. So for example, physical activity, if you can increase your physical activity, you can reduce your risk of colorectal cancer by almost 40%. So there's little things that people can do in their lives that make these difference. So although I'll be going to be talking a lot about screening, because that is what I work on mostly, I don't want to lose sight of all the primary prevention things. And especially tobacco use is one of the ones that we really try and address, because that, you know, people don't always, they say, well, how is tobacco? You know, they kind of know tobacco and lung cancer, but they don't know about tobacco and colorectal cancer. They're like, well, I'm smoking. It's how is it all affecting my colon? Well, it affects, you know, your entire GI tract. You're all through your body. And so that's something that, again, we want to really make sure people know about and are taking steps to be more healthy. Now, you know, I talk about screening, but there are signs of colorectal cancer. And this is something that's really important if you are a healthcare provider or just, you know, somebody you're chatting with your uncle or aunt, and they mention that they might have some of these. They're like, I've had some blood in my stool. I've been constipated for a while. I'm very tired. I lost weight. And so if people are having these symptoms, it's really important for them to go see a provider to get it checked out, even if they're young. I have a very good friend right now who she's 31 and has a colorectal cancer. She has stage 4 colorectal cancer, and she's been having some symptoms for a while, and they kind of got, you know, they're like, well, it's something else. You're perfectly healthy. You're young. And so it wasn't really looked at. So again, it's really important if people are having some symptoms that we encourage them, and we try and make space so that people can get checked. So these are, I will say, you know, these are some possible signs and symptoms, but really the most common, if you look at this, what do you think is the most common sign of colorectal cancer? And you can feel free to put it in the chat or just kind of think about it in your brain. What do you think would be the most common sign? Okay, I'm seeing some things going in the chat. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. So I got some votes for some blood and stool. People are thinking that's a really common one. Constipation. Yep. Bloating. Yeah. Gas pains. Tired. Okay. Interesting. So we got votes for all. So across them, losing weight. Okay. Well, I will say this is a little bit of a trick question because the most common sign and symptoms is that it does no signs or symptoms. So colorectal cancer often starts quietly without signs or symptoms. And that's why the screening is so important, because even if people are super healthy, they feel fine, you know, they've never had a moment's worry about their GI, but they might still have these little precancerous polyps that are slowly starting. So that is why we really focus so much on screening. And by screening, I don't mean what you put on your windows to keep the mosquitoes out if you are in Alaska. Screening is really checking something out before you feel any symptoms, just to see whether you might have some issue that needs to be addressed later. And so the U.S. Preventative Services Task Force has screening recommendations for average risk adults. And this actually has recently changed. It used to be age 50 was sort of the everyone should get screened at 50. Now 45 is the new 50. So everyone, all adults, you know, males, females, are recommended to get screened at age 45. Here in Alaska, because, you know, as I said, we have higher rates of colorectal cancer here, our guidelines are to start at age 40 for Alaska Native people. And that is something that was based on the data, looking at all the rates of colorectal cancer and really trying to get out in front of this so that people don't have the burden of this disease. So what are some of the options? There's actually a number of screening tests that are available throughout the nation. There's screening colonoscopy, there's stool tests, which are done at home, there's sigmoidoscopy. So they have, there's a number of tests, and that's one of the things we do try and emphasize with folks is that these tests, you know, there's different tests and they have their pros and their cons, but they are available. And to do the test that you are willing to do and able to get to, that's the best test. The best test is the one that actually gets done. So where is colorectal cancer screening at throughout the Indian Health Service regions? Well, it varies, and you can look here, and maybe if you know your region, you might be able to take a look at where the average is for you. Alaska, I'm proud to say that we have a higher rate, but we still have a really far way to go. So there is a lot that we need to do to increase screening among people so that everyone is getting this this vital test. So why don't people get screened? I think it's always good to kind of think this through and to put ourselves in other people's shoes. So I can give the example of my mom. She didn't know. She's like, oh, I've heard you're supposed to do that at some point, but she didn't know when. She was, you know, she didn't have any problems. It just wasn't on her radar. So there's a lot of different reasons why people don't get screened. And I think it's really important for us to think about this because we don't know how to address people's barriers and concerns if we don't know what they are. So we have done a lot where we ask people, what are some of your concerns? And we find that there's a number of personal factors. Sometimes it's fear of not knowing this you know, what is this test? I recently got my colonoscopy, my first screening colonoscopy, and I was nervous. And I work in this field. I've, you know, seen the pictures. I've even seen a scope being done. And I still was not quite sure what it would be like when it was me going through it. I will say it was totally fine. And so I encourage people to go for it because it was much, much better than I thought it would be. But just not being sure, you know, what is this going to be? Feeling healthy. In Alaska, we have a big issue, and I think in a lot of the communities you work in too, it's not like you can walk down the street necessarily and get a fit test or get a colonoscopy. So having to travel is a really big one as well. But in addition to those personal or individual factors, I think it's also really important to think about what is done as a system to help people and or that hinders people. And so I think the system level factors in our clinics, in our hospitals, what are we doing that makes it easier for people to get screened? So as I mentioned earlier, sometimes it's just screening is not available in the community. And then for providers, I know I talked to some providers and they say, you know, I don't have time to like scroll through their medical record and see if the person is due for screening. So we don't necessarily always have tracking systems to know when people are due or to see their past results because maybe they have to be screened more frequently. So just sort of there's these things that go on that if we don't know, if our system doesn't help us out, then it can be hard to recommend it. And, you know, they're obviously a patient, they're in front of you, they're coming in for a cough or something, some acute condition, you're not going to have the time to spend to go like looking up and figuring out when they're due for screening. So as much as we can set up systems that help patients get screened, it really makes a difference. This last point, recommendation from the provider, in multiple studies, in multiple populations, it has been found that one of the key things about whether somebody got screened or did not was because they got a strong recommendation from the provider. And that can be from the nurse, the doctor, the CMA, the receptionist at the front desk, having everyone in the clinic that is pulling together and saying, oh, I noticed in your chart that you haven't been screened. Why don't we talk about that today and try and get screened because that's really important and we recommend you do that. So again, that recommendation makes a big difference. I tend to think of cancer screening as a continuum. You know, you have all these pieces that are playing a role in whether you get screened or not. Again, you have the patient with their being willing. You need that access to care. There has to be screening available. The health system has to help support that effort till you get to the shining sun of screening completion. Now here in Alaska, I'm very fortunate that I work on a colorectal cancer control program, and we do a number of different activities trying to increase screening. We have set up partnerships with a number of tribal health organizations around our state who actually do screening in their communities. And we work on evidence-based interventions and trying to increase the quality standards and standardize workflows. And also, and what I think is really helpful is improving electronic health records. So this sort of shows a little bit about our process. As I said, this is a project we're doing that is focused on the primary care clinic and really trying to increase screening by 10% annually in each clinic, which sometimes that can be a challenging. I don't need to tell you all that the last number of years, there might have been something else going on called a COVID-19 pandemic, which really has taken a lot of our time and a lot of healthcare providers provider time. And so we're just now really starting to ramp up our focus on cancer screening and other prevention, again, trying to catch people up and get them back in the door. So what are the practices we use for colorectal cancer screening? Well, there's a number of evidence-based interventions that are recommended by the community guide. And the first is provider feedback and assessment. Then there's provider and patient reminders and reducing structural barriers for patients, as well as some supporting activities, including patient navigation and small media. I will say my personal feeling is that the patient navigation really is interwoven throughout all of these interventions and really is the foundation for getting people to consider screening. So what are these evidence-based interventions for colorectal cancer screening? Well, the first one is provider assessment and feedback, and that can be a lot of different things. Some examples of things that we have seen done here in Alaska are motivating providers with an internal scorecard or financial incentives, looking at electronic health record data. So for example, we helped get a dashboard set up. And so you can actually look at who's due for screening by provider and by community. And that's something that some of the provider teams can use. They look at that quarterly, and or they can look by community, and they're like, okay, you know, in community, I've taken the names out of these ones, so community 10, there's 104 people that have been screened and 75 that still need screening. What can we do to reach out to those 75 individuals and get them their screening completion? There's also provider reminders, and there's been a number of things we've done in this area. One of them is to have provider reminder badge cards. So having the colorectal cancer screening guidelines on the badge card. I have my little badge right here with the different cards on the, and I can quick flip and look at the colorectal cancer screening guidelines on that. Another thing that we have been working on is periodically updating our colorectal cancer screening guidelines that is put out by the Alaska Native Medical Center. And the most recent one was in 2021. And so, for example, those guidelines are what are used around our state by many of our tribal, our tribal health organizations to use as the basis for their screening practices. So again, making sure that we are consistent in our screening, that we provide tools. As I mentioned, having a dashboard, like an electronic health record, people that are, if you are on, like for example, RPMS, there's iCare tools. So oftentimes there are some tools built into electronic health records. What's interesting is they aren't always turned on. So that's something for you to consider is sometimes it involves something, an actual, I don't think it's a physical switch, that I'm old fashioned enough to not exactly know how the computer systems work in that regard. I leave that to very excellent, smart people, but there are a lot of things that can be used within our medical records that could be helpful for increasing screening. Then I think it's really important to think about the patient side of things. So patient reminders. These are some examples that our partners are using. And, you know, I think it can be really as simple as reminder letters, phone calls. I know a lot of folks now have started using more text messaging. I think that these can be a really helpful thing. I know I have a cat, and I would never know when my cat needed her rabies shot, except I get a little postcard in the mail every couple of years from my vet that tells me to bring her in. So again, you know, people are busy. They have a lot going on in their lives. So what can we do to make it easier for them to come in and get screening done? It's also really important to reduce structural barriers, and structural barriers can take many forms. We've done some work. This is one of our partners where they created some new bowel prep instructions because for the colonoscopy, you have to do a bowel prep to clean out the colon. And they were finding that people didn't always understand with their old guidelines or their old prep what to do. And so this was a way for them to show it visually. They included a picture about a video so that people could actually watch a video. So again, just making it a little bit easier for people to understand the process. I have to admit, I just did my colonoscopy and I did have to read my instructions. I'm like, okay, I can't have any Alaska wild blueberries for a couple of days before. And that was very sad to take out of my oatmeal, but it was important for the procedure. Another thing is getting kits to people. So as I mentioned, there are take-home stool tests. So is there a possibility to send those kits to people in the mail, along with a postage paid envelope so that people can do the kit at home? I've done them, they're pretty quick, and then you can just send it in. So again, what can we do to make it easier? If there's nothing else that I share with people, that I think is the most important. I do think it's also important in the background to work on your systems and electronic health records. I will say this can be some of the most challenging work because, you know, it's not something that you necessarily can directly do. Sometimes you're working with an IT team and trying to translate what you need and want to what they may be able to do or not do in the system. But it can be really powerful. I have certainly found, you know, if you can have some flag that comes up when people are due for screening or the ability to print out a list. So for example, from our dashboard now, when a provider is traveling out to a rural community, they go out to the community, to the clinic every couple of months, and the mid-level provider will take the list and they're like, okay, these six people are due for screening. Well, you're in the community. If they come into the clinic, can you talk to them about it? Or if you have a couple of moments, could you give them a call? So again, using the tools that are there, but also this involves cleaning up the data. And I'm not going to sugarcoat it. That means a person ends up, sometimes a patient navigator or a CMA, somebody has to go through and make sure that the data in the record is correct, you know, that it's not, you know, actually the person did have a colonoscopy last year, so they're not due for a while yet. So you do have to do some data cleaning, but it really makes a big difference. We find then providers trust it. They don't have to dig through the record. They see the person's due. They make sure to recommend it during the time they are with them. So again, that's really a critical piece, but it is challenging. And I commend everyone that celebrate the victories when you're able to make these changes. I also want to mention colorectal cancer screening. As I said, patient navigators are so crucial to getting people screened. They don't always necessarily have that name. You know, the navigators go by many names, whether it's a cancer coordinator or a CMA or, you know, sometimes nurses do the role. But basically somebody who is maybe from the community, maybe speaks the language and can motivate other people to get screened, can help walk them through barriers they have, address transportation or other concerns, and really help them move forward into screening. So I think that that's really a critical piece of getting people in the door. We also have a project where people who have colon cancer are asked for information about their first degree relatives, and we get their permission to reach out to their relatives. That information is in a registry. And then when those people are due for screening, we follow up with them, because people who are first degree relatives need to be screened earlier and more frequently than average risk people. So as I said, I do get a card in the mail from my vet for my cat rabies shot. I think there's a lot of value to giving people reminders. These are just a couple examples of reminders, postcards from some of our partners that have been used for colon cancer screening. We also did a campaign, it's been a little bit ago, but having people who had previously been screened for colon cancer share their screening story and encouraging others to do it, both Alaska Native and non-Native people from around our state participated. So we had a couple who got screened, they got their colonoscopies together. We had somebody who had her mother had colon cancer, so it's especially important for her to get it done early. Dr. David Baines, who is a Tlingit medical doctor as well, he is a big advocate for screening. We had a gentleman who is a firefighter, and he was lovely. He's like, real men, just go do it. It's easy, peace of mind, let's get it done. So all kinds of folks sharing their story. And again, that sort of, you know, from the community, grassroots messages really make a difference. Because of COVID-19, a lot of the community events like health fairs and other kinds of activities that we traditionally would have done, we hadn't been able to do as much. So we have tried to really increase our use of social media and small media creation. So presentations and getting, you know, the banners on websites, just trying to get the message out through whatever channels that we can. This is part of a new campaign that we got the idea from another state and then reformatted it for, adapted it for Alaska. We had our Alaska Native Elders Committee review and give us suggestions and feedback, and sort of the final was, we have some duck butts and bottoms up, don't duck out on your colon cancer screening. And then we have a big grizzly bear facing away, no butts about it, time to bear a colon cancer screening. We've been told that really people appreciate having more of a humorous message in cancer prevention, that it's not just, the concern of, you know, it's a scary, terrible thing that nobody wants to talk about, that really reframing it as something as prevention, as something we can do something about, and that it doesn't have to be so scary. So that's been some of our more recent things. And that is also in these ads, remember rocking out on your Walkman, then it's probably time to talk to your healthcare provider about a colon cancer screening. Or if you remember when these jeans were in fashion, then it's probably time to get screened. Again, these are things that people look at and they chuckle and they're like, maybe I should take a look at that. We've also done a lot of work, as I said, in community efforts around using giant inflatable colons, we have Nolan the colon. And it's really, it's one of those things, a lot of us, we're tactile. We like to touch something and to see something in order to understand it. And so these giant colons they have screening messages and information on the inside and shows the progression of colon cancer. We encourage people, touch the walls and take a look at it. And it really makes a difference in helping people understand. We also use polyp people. You see here one of our staff members dressed in a polyp person suit. I have run a cancer prevention 5K in it. I will say it is very warm to wear. I was not very fast. But again, it was fun. People kind of laugh. They're like, is that a blood drop? And you're like, no, I'm a colon polyp. But you can prevent that from by getting screened. So again, and you know, this is not just our feelings on it. We've done some research where we asked people, we did surveys and didn't gather information, and found that using the giant colon actually helped increase people's willingness to get screened, their comfort talking about it with friends and family, and their knowledge about screening. So again, it's really important to think about the ways that we can create opportunities for people to ask questions and get more information. And, you know, sometimes you also need to be in the local parade. So this is one of our, we have a parade, and it's actually in early spring. And so we had a bunch of polyp people and juvenile polyps on a float in the parade. So going where the people are, I think, is a really important thing. I want to, in my last little bit here, also touch on a project that we've done. This is a study that we started in spring of 2020. And we're basically looking at whether using a stool DNA test along with patient navigation will help increase colorectal cancer screening among Alaska Native people in rural communities. And we are working with a lab in Madison, Wisconsin, to see if their at-home stool test will help increase screening rates. So the challenge is that after a person collects their sample for this test, it needs to get to Madison in 96 hours for processing, which, as you might guess, this seems impossible from rural Alaska Native communities. So what we are currently doing, we're testing the possibility of setting up a pre-processing lab in Alaska so that the samples have to get from the rural community to Anchorage in 96 hours. So this is in process. It's trying to find out more. Here are a couple of slides from the lab. We're actually set up at the Alaska Public Health Lab, who very kindly gave us a little corner to use. Basically, we process the stool samples and we freeze them and then ship them to Madison for the actual cancer detection and analysis. So we will find out whether this colorectal cancer screening test can actually work in the Alaska setting, and whether patient navigation or mailed outreach can help increase screening. So more to come. As I said, this is a five-year project. We're working in multiple communities. And so we hope to find out more. Again, we want to have more options available for people to get screened. So whether this test can help that is still to be the next time I come talk to you, maybe we can chat about that. So I do want to leave you with this. The thing, I saw this in an article published just a few years ago that said over 3/4 of colorectal cancer deaths occurred in people who are not up to date with screening. And so that really drove home for me that we want to make sure that everybody who is due for screening is offered it and has that opportunity to get screened, because if they don't, you know, that's really a missed opportunity, and we don't want to see that happen. So how can you help? I think that I always like to leave people with a little bit of homework, and that is, if you are a provider, please, please strongly recommend colorectal cancer screening to the patients and clients that you serve, because that really makes such a difference. Even if it's something, you know, for the next month, you're just like, just checking, have you been screened? Let's have you talk to somebody about getting screened. You know, we have some, you know, learning if there's fit kits in your clinic that you can hand out. Again, just making sure that people have access to that. Talking to people that you know. A lot of us live in small communities. When I was a kid, I'd go to the post office and it would be an hour-long process because you can't just go and get your mail at the post office. You have to talk to everyone. And so really talking to people, though, about the importance of getting screened. And then if you are due, so if you are over 45, if you are not Alaska Native, or 40, if you are Alaska Native, consider getting screened. This is something, I just got my screening done. It was something that I was nervous about, but I felt really much better afterward. And so again, being able to share that, tell other people your story and encourage them to screen is really important. Plus, if you get screened, that's one more person screened, and that makes me happy. So I will say that there is a national effort. The National Colorectal Cancer Roundtable has this goal of 80% colorectal cancer screening in every community. So I do encourage you to find out maybe what the screening rates are in your community or in your area or region, and think about what are ways that we might be able to increase the screening rates. I think we're doing a lot of work in this area across the nation, which is really exciting. But there's, again, you know, those 3/4 of people who weren't up to date were the ones that are getting colon cancer. I don't want that to be true anymore. So I will say that I think we're doing a lot, and I hope that we continue to do all that we can to reduce the burden of this disease for now and for future generations. And with that, I will say thank you, Kwayana Gunashish. I appreciate all of your time, and I am happy to answer any questions. I tried to leave plenty of time because I think I saw some colon questions and stuff coming through the chat. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Dr. Redwood. And thank you to everybody for the time on listening on today's presentation. Our first question here, this person says, with take-home kits, are you doing the one-and-done fit or 3-sample FOBTs?
Yeah, so we mostly use the one-and-done fit because, you know, like all of us, it's easier to do one thing than have to do it 3 times. So, and we use the fit instead of the older, sometimes people use the older guaiac-based fecal occult blood tests. We don't tend to recommend those in Alaska because people eat a lot of red meat and wild game. And so sometimes it can make those have false positive. So we use the FIT because it doesn't require any medication or dietary restrictions. And most of them are 1-sample tests and have really high sensitivity. So that's what we use.
This next person here says, any advice on bowel prep or for FOLX, who live in rural areas and need to travel 2+ hours for their colonoscopy?
Yeah, that's a really hard one. And certainly we face that in Alaska, where you have to fly to somewhere and stay a couple of days for your screening exam. I don't have a good answer for that other than there are split preps. Sometimes that's easier for people to do, where, you know, they take part of the prep the night before and part in the morning, and usually you're pretty well emptied out with that in your clear liquid diet before you are getting to the procedure. But it is, you know, it is a challenge. That those would be some of my suggestions.
And if anybody has any questions, go ahead and type them into the Q&A box and we'll get them answered as soon as we can here. Also, I do want to just point out that we will be archiving this webinar today. The webinar will be archived hopefully by Tuesday or Wednesday next week. And you'll be able to find it at keepitsacred.org. And you can also follow us on social media as well. Also, if you did attend this webinar and are looking for CEs, you should be getting a email in your email box tomorrow, about 24 hours from now. So probably about 3 or 4 o'clock p.m. Eastern time. And that'll be coming from Zoom. And that will have your survey evaluation for today's webinar. If you just give us some feedback on there, fill out the quick little 10-minute survey, let us know how we did, and we can go ahead and get you set up for your CEs. This other person here asks, any suggestions on how to help uninsured patients complete colonoscopies when patients have positive IFOBT or FIT tests?
Yeah, so this is an important one to address. Finding, you know, payment, because a colonoscopy can be expensive. And truthfully, if there was a positive FIT, there might be more likelihood of finding some polyps. There are a number of things that I've seen people do in places that have colorectal cancer control programs. There is usually some funding available through that. Some places have Project Access, where different colonoscopy providers donate and facilities donate a certain amount, you know, 5 colonoscopies a year or, you know, per provider. There's some donation that allows you to get some of those people in. I know in our state, I don't know if this is true in all states, but if somebody is on Medicaid, if the you know, if they are low income and on Medicaid and they have it pays for diagnostic colonoscopies. We just recently got news that it's also going to cover preventive colonoscopies, which was a big win for some of our policy advocates to try and make sure that Medicaid is covering people, not just for the diagnostics, but also for screenings. So you basically have to kind of look and see what the options might be in your area. I do know that American Cancer Society also has like little mini grants available here and there for, I think that more covers like travel and like transportation kind of things. But still, if you can kind of cobble together stuff, that makes a big difference. I will say for myself, I was told originally that if polyps were found, that that the exam would change from a screening colonoscopy to a diagnostic one, and I would have to pay for it. And I have insurance, but that certainly gave me a gasp because I don't exactly have an extra couple thousand dollars lying around. And so I actually reached out to, because I'd heard, you know, through work that that's not true anymore, that there's national requirements that if somebody goes in for a screening exam, it stays a screening exam and is covered even if they find polyps. So I won't name my insurer, but I will say that I pulled the information from the national FAQs and sent it to them. And they quickly said like, oh, actually we have it wrong. You are correct. It is covered. So sometimes even when people have insurance, you need to help advocate and know that screenings and things are covered and at no charge. So that's sort of, you know, a little bit of a personal aside, but I was determined that to pursue it. I, even after I knew my exam was normal, I still wanted to make sure for other people that they were giving them the correct information.
This person here asks, what is the IHS recommended CRC age screening age, 45 or 40, 50? And then they had a second part to their question, do 638 or urban facilities have more control of changing the national CRC screening policy recommendations?
So that's a good question. My understanding is that age 45 is the recommendation for across, you know, all people across the nation. That is something I don't know that IHS has some specific different. Usually I think they follow the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force national recommendations and the multi-society task force recommendations. In terms of setting your own, you know, for example, like in Alaska, we set it earlier. That meant that our system decided to pay for screenings for people who are younger than 45. Actually, it was 50 at the time. So, you know, another decade of people who, and there was a lot of conversations at our hospital about how that was going to be covered. You know, the science was there, the data was there, but not, you know, then they had to decide we're going to have to put money behind it because it's not covered, for example, by insurers at that point. So your clinics, you know, you might think about setting, you know, policies. It does have financial implications. One thing I will say is that I was talking at a conference not too long ago, and they said it's really important to start talking to people. What they're finding is that you see people age, you know, like 1 year after the screening guy, you know, the age they're supposed to start, 1 year after that is when they actually are getting screened. So maybe we should, even if you don't reduce the age of screening, maybe if you start targeting, for example, you know, all your patients that are 44 right now. So talking to them, you know, when you turn 45, you're going to be due for screening. What test would you prefer? Let's, you know, talk about your options. Here's where you go to get it. And so kind of prepping it early, that actually might be good. And that kind of plays into the, as I mentioned, early onset colorectal cancer. So some people were really finding that although colorectal cancer is declining among older age populations, which is great. We're doing more screening. It's actually increasing among younger people. It's still a small proportion of the total number of people who have colon cancer. Obviously, you know, older people are still more likely, but it is concerning that younger people are getting it. And so, you know, those younger people aren't due for screening yet. But again, if we can, you know, be encouraging, you know, those 44-year-olds, like get ready, get prepped, then when they turn 45 and are due and are eligible for screening, then they're ready to go.
And if anybody has any questions, we still have a couple more minutes, please type them into the Q&A box. This person here asks, and what strategies or helpful ways to get our young men into getting tested for this type of cancer? So do you have any strategies or ways to help get young men specifically getting tested?
I have to say in Alaska, that was one of the things we, you know, you often look at your data and you're like, okay, who are the people we aren't getting screened? And here, I don't know, Alaska Native men are great at getting their screening done. And so it's pretty even, men and women both getting screened, maybe slightly more women. But I think the main thing that can be really helpful is finding out why they aren't getting screened. If there's a way to do any kind of outreach to people to encourage them to get screened and just ask a quick question, like why have you not gotten screened? We just did a focus group with Alaska Native men who hadn't been screened. Most of them were, you know, they're all of screening age, and asking them why they hadn't been screened yet. And I don't have information yet from that because it's part of the study and we're still analyzing it. But again, if there's ways, you know, if you can hold a quick talking circle or find out what are some of the things that deter people, I think that can be really important. I know that for some men, the concern about the invasiveness of like a colonoscopy might be a deterrent, but they might be more willing to do a stool test. So just kind of figuring out where people are at makes a big difference.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much, Dr. Redwood. At this time, we'll go ahead and conclude our webinar presentation. We'd like to thank Dr. Redwood for taking the time to present today. And we'd also like to thank everybody who attended today's presentation as well. And if anybody has any further questions, go ahead and reach out to us and we'll connect you with Dr. Redwood. So thank you very much to everybody for attending, and we hope you have yourselves a wonderful day.
To view the full webinar video and additional resources, please visit our website, keepitsacred.org, and click the Resources tab and the Webinar Archive tab. Thank you for listening to this Webinar Archive presentation from the National Native Network. I
Let's go, Kamati.